Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and Mary Beth Williams is here. You may know her as culture critic for The Takeaway. She is also, as it turns out, a New Yorker tortured by our housing crisis. The old New York housing crisis, that is. The one where prices were too high before they became too low.
Oh, too low. Are they too low now?
Well, you'll tell me in just a minute. And just as the housing bubble was beginning to burst, Mary Beth was completing a book about her and her husband's tortuous search for a home that they could afford in Brooklyn or Manhattan for themselves and their two daughters. And as you'll hear, they finally found one in Upper Manhattan, but the whole experience was anything but the American dream, right, Mary Beth?
Exactly. Good morning, yes.
Good morning. It was more like American purgatory and
American hell and various levels of it, yes.
And now in the new crisis, it takes on a whole meaning. The book is called Gimme Shelter: Ugly Houses, Cruddy Neighborhoods, Fast-Talking Brokers, and Toxic Mortgages, My 3 Years Searching for the American Dream. Congratulations, you get the longest book title of the month award.
Yes, it's about vampires. the title is the book, and the book is the title. That about sums it up.
By the way, how do you get to be a culture critic? That must be the best job in the world. Everybody's a culture critic at their dinner table. You get to do it on the radio.
I guess if there's one thing I'm good at, it's just giving my little opinions. And I've been doing it for a really long time. So it's either that or bartending school. So
Where'd you go to college? Did they have a culture critic major?
I went to Temple University in Philly, majored in film. So I've been able to, and I started out in the film industry, and then that was going bust, and wound up in San Francisco working in the zine world for a long time, and just kept writing. And occasionally, people pay me small sums of money to give my opinion.
Where did you grow up, and in what kind of a house?
I grew up in Jersey City, New Jersey. I grew up without a dad. I was raised by my mom and my grandmother and my grandmother's sister, and so I spent my life in other people's houses. I didn't have a home of my own until I bought a house 3 years ago, an apartment 3 years ago, and that was a big part of the quest for me. I didn't have that stable nuclear family and that home that I knew was always mine. I was always living as a guest of someone else.
And what about your husband, Jeff, who's the co-star of your book?
He is the second billing for sure, or co-billing for sure. He grew up as the son of a minister, so even though they had their own homes, they were always owned by the church and had to go where the church told them to go. And that's not uncommon. Most of us, very few people really have that stable feeling of this is where I grew up and this is the homestead. That is diminishing. We're a more peripatetic culture than ever before. You know, one of the things I found in Gimme Shelter very early on is the census estimates we move between 11 and 12 times in a lifetime. So home is a very fluid concept.
Did your upbringings make it hard to negotiate where to look for a home to buy?
Well, the thing that made it difficult was that I really love New York. I grew up right around here, and I discovered Brooklyn, and I've lived in other places, but I love New York. I love being part of the city life and city communities, and I believe so passionately in city living and that there has to be a place here for middle-class people like me, working-class people like me. And what happened during the quest was it was just becoming harder and harder for regular people to afford to live in the city.
And you were really, and you're very open about this in the book, conflicted about whether to buy an apartment for your family as opposed to a house, having to always tell your two daughters to be quiet for the neighbors, or not having a yard that they could just fall out into and play, or having them have to share a room. I gather you live in a two-bedroom and they share a room. And yet the city was that important to you.
The city, the diversity, the culture, the mix of people rubbing up against each other was really, really important to me. And people every step of the way still continue to say, you know, if you move to Nebraska, you could have this. You could have a yard and you could have stairs. And I get all of that. And I have so many friends who've made that move and made that choice. Very good friends of mine said, when you have the second kid, you have to leave the city. And I just feel like it's not what I hope the lesson of this book and what this story is that it's not what anybody else tells you. It's what's right for you and your family and where you feel at home. And that concept is so intimate and personal.
Yeah. Of course, suburbs at this point, maybe not within a block, but they're pretty diverse. If diversity was what you were looking for, you could look at the overall population of Nassau County, and it's probably one of the more diverse counties in America.
I know. I have very good friends in Montclair, and they keep saying Montclair is the answer. But I feel very strongly that cities have to be able to sustain regular working class people, and leaving can't just be the option for everybody. If we all throw up our hands and say, once you have two kids, you have to leave the city, that takes away something from the culture and the life of a city. And so I feel it's a statement for working class people to be able to stay here.
So you came to this late in the bubble when your goal was to stay in Brooklyn, and you wound up being only able to afford Manhattan. And this was after 20 years of families like yours wanting to stay in Manhattan and being forced to move to Brooklyn.
I started out as Bridge and Tunnel and was proudly Bridge and Tunnel, proudly Jersey, proudly Brooklyn. To me, Brooklyn meant being edgier and different. And I just assumed, as I still hear people saying, well, Manhattan is untouchable, Manhattan is unattainable. And what I discovered just kind of circuitously and weirdly is that there is actually a great deal of the city above 125th Street. I didn't know that. The city goes up to 220th Street, and there are a lot of great communities on this tiny island. And, you know, when I tell people what my six-word version of the book Gimme Shelter is, I say, priced out of Brooklyn, discovered Manhattan.
Gimme Shelter. Ugly Houses, Cruddy Neighborhoods, Fast Talking Brokers, and Toxic Mortgages, My 3 Year Searching for the American Dream, the more than six-word version of the title of the book by Mary Beth Williams. Maybe you know her as the Takeaways culture critic, visiting us this morning on the Brian Lehrer Show. So you finally bought in Upper Manhattan, in Inwood, and far from the American Dream, you and your husband, as I read this book, are not at all happy as you go through the process of this move in 2006. You're feeling like you bought a place that was too small for your family, not where you really wanted to be, which was Brooklyn. Why'd you do it if it felt that bad?
Well, it didn't feel that bad, Brian. There were a lot of other circumstances. My husband lost his job 2 days before we closed on our co-op, and this was his second job loss in a year. I mean, what was happening in the economy was really affecting how we felt about everything that was going on, and I think that's the story that a lot of people have. You're pursuing this dream, and simultaneously, there's this nightmare unfolding all around you. What has happened is moving out of my neighborhood was not my first choice, but it wound up being my best choice. And because of being open to something different and finding what I could afford and something I could live with, I found a community. And I think that's the story for a lot of us, is somewhere along the way, searching for the dream, you find something else, and that turns out to be the dream.
Did you, looking back on this now, and maybe in light of the bubble having burst, do you ask yourself, well, what was I thinking? Was the script so powerful that I had to buy a home in order to have a home, that maybe I should have looked more seriously at renting?
Yeah, I thought I was a smart person. I thought that I was working with the frontal part of my lobes, and actually it was all back there in my lizard brain for sure. And what happened in this country, what happened to a lot of us, is the ownership society was peddled so aggressively, and interest rates were so low, and everybody was buying, and people were buying with no money in their pockets, and you were really shamed by a lot of your friends and colleagues into feeling like a failure if you somehow weren't on board on this train. And what happened was housing appreciated in New York City 65% in 5 years. That was not uncommon in other parts of the country. So you started to feel like, oh my God, if I don't get in on this, I'm going to miss out completely, and I'm going to be shortchanging myself and my children.
So how do you look back on that now?
Oh, that was crazy. I was completely out of my mind, for sure.
Were you duped by a broker or a banker or anything?
No, I think I was extraordinarily lucky. I was very lucky. I had a very, very honest and forthcoming mortgage broker who insisted that we be very scrupulous about the way that we went about this process. We wound up getting a seller who was eager to sell, who had had their home on the market for a long time. We were very, very lucky, and I don't think that we were any smarter than anybody else. I don't think we have any greater financial acumen than anybody else, but because I saw so many of my friends who are very smart people really get rooked.
And the beginnings of the end of the boom were already peeking up above the surface in 2006 when you moved in. Did you realize as you were closing and moving that this was starting to take place?
I knew before then. I mean, I didn't know with the level that the level that it was going to take shape. I certainly couldn't have seen that writing on the wall. But anybody who saw those open houses and saw people buying apartments that weren't even built yet, spending millions of dollars with no money in their pockets, flipping, you know, 2 months after they'd bought something, had to have the hair on the back of their neck standing up. And when I hear people say, we couldn't have predicted this, I just feel like, really? How could you not have? I could, and I can't split the tip.
Is the downturn affecting your life or your feelings about your apartment? Are you obsessively checking the purported value of your apartment and judging your quality of life by it?
You know, yes and no. I think the great lesson that I learned in all of this is to not think of your home as just an asset. I think if we can all get away from that as a culture and to not just think of it as something that's going to make money, but as your home. And when I moved into my home, that became my home. And that's the place where I sleep and that's the place where I want to wake up. And yeah, I'm intrigued by the value of it. And a neighbor of mine put her apartment on the market, and I was curious what she was going to get for it for sure. I want to know how my investment is doing. But the main thing is that's my home. That's where I sleep and my kids sleep, and that's the most important thing.
When I was joking as I introduced you about the old New York housing crisis, the one where prices were too high before they became too low, and you burst out, wait, they're too low?
Right. Wait, where did that happen? Prices are dipping slightly, but there's still nothing. It's still not like you can come in and get a steal. Anybody who thinks that is just kidding themselves. Maybe you can definitely do it in places like Florida or in Southern California. But here in New York City, I just saw an apartment in my old neighborhood in Carroll Gardens in Brooklyn listed for $1.9 million. So I don't think anybody is going to be getting away with robbing the bank on that one.
Keyword listed. But this crash, or whatever you want to call it, is perhaps actually good in some way if buying a home becomes affordable again, assuming people have jobs.
Right. That's the sticky wicket, is whether or not we can get jobs. What I hope will happen, because I am just so aggressively optimistic about everything, is that this gives us a moment to breathe in all of the mania, in all of the hysteria that's taken place over the last few years, to sit back and say, what is my home? What is my investment? How am I spending my money? And who are my neighbors? We have to start caring about each other, and we are all connected. And if the guy next to me goes into foreclosure, that's going to affect me. We have to be more responsible in how we develop and how we build and how we buy.
So you think the insane crash teaches you different things about America than the insane boom?
I hope so. I hope that it will bring out something kinder and more altruistic in all of us, but who knows for sure.
By the way, how touchy is it to chronicle New York by chronicling your family angst? How does your husband feel about having details of his psychology in your relationship written up in a book for all the world to see? The first time you had sex in your new apartment and the whole thing.
He liked it. He's enough of an open minded person, and he's just been so used to being the subject of my stories and the subject of stories about sex that I think he was just kind of par for the course for it. I mean, obviously, he read the whole book before I submitted a word of it, and if there was something in it that made him really uncomfortable, I wouldn't have put it in.
And then he's a star by association. People say, oh, you're that, Jeff?
Yeah, that happens all the time, Brian.
I read that your next book will be about navigating public education.
That's the hope, yeah.
So you really like to torture your family with your writing, don't
you?
You
know what it is? It's just we're all tortured anyway. These are such torturous subjects. And as a public school parent, I have a great investment in that world and that life as well. And I'm really concerned what's happening in our schools, not just in New York City, but across the country. And I want to get to the heart of that. And I want to understand what's going on and what happened with No Child Left Behind, because that's the next part of this story. 2 million children in this country are in homes that are facing foreclosure. That's going to affect all of us.
That's right. 30 seconds left. What's the moral of the story?
Read the fine print. Read the fine print. Read the fine print.
275, more than that, 307, about 320 pages of fine print.
Read the fine print. And, Brian, I'm going to be doing a discussion tomorrow night at Housing Works store in Soho in New York City. And we would love to have everybody come by and tell your own housing stories and dramas.
Oh, participatory book reading and signing.
It's a group hug.
At the Housing Works in Soho tomorrow at?
7 p.m.
Great. Mary Elizabeth Williams, and you can hear her as culture critic on The Takeaway, her new book, Gimme Shelter, Ugly Houses, Cruddy Neighborhoods, Fast Talking Brokers, and Toxic Mortgages, My 3 Years Searching for the American Dream, published by Simon & Schuster.
Very well done.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.